The Supreme Truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because He is subtle, the Supreme Truth, because He is subtle, He is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, He is also near to all. Purport. In Vedic literature, we understand that Narayana, the Supreme Person, is residing both outside and inside of every living entity. He is present in both the spiritual and material worlds. Although He is far, far away, still He is near to us. These are the statements of Vedic literature. Asino duram vrajati shayano jati sarvata. And because He is always engaged in transcendental bliss, Krishna, huh? We cannot understand how He is enjoying His full opulence. We cannot see or understand with these material senses. These material senses we cannot see or understand, Krishna. They are dead, just like the glass. Glass is dead. The soul who sees. Therefore, in the Vedic language, it is said that to understand Him, our material mind and senses cannot act. But one who has purified his mind and senses by practicing Krishna consciousness in devotional service can see Him constantly. It is confirmed in Brahma Sanghita that the devotee who has developed love for the Supreme God can see Him always without cessation. And it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 54, that He can be seen and understood only by devotional service. Bhaktya tvananyaya shakya. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. The verse to which Srila Prabhupada refers us is here, 11:54, which says, only by devotional service. It says, Bhaktva tvananyaya shakya aham nevang vidorjuna gyatum drashtum chatadvena praveshtum chatparantapa. My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing here before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishnaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Sami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Vacharine Nivesesa Shunyavade Askatyade Sadarine Jaya Sri Krishna Jaitana Prabhu Nityananda Advaita Gadadhara Jivas Adi Govakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama
Hare Hare.
I'm a little bit thinking now about, this is the restaurant most properly behind this wall?
Entrance hall.
It's the entrance hall. I see that these windows are a little open, or is my, can we close them so that we can reduce the noise factor from there? They don't go, or is the door open or something? It seems we live in the daily train station. This is like the... So yes, we close the door. Let us again hear the verse. The Supreme Truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because he is subtle, he is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, he's also near to all. This is really a verse which convinces us of the all-pervading presence of Krishna. Actually, in his last days here in Vrindavan, on that bed, which is just in the next room, Prabhupada gave a beautiful definition of Krishna consciousness in relationship to this understanding that Krishna is everywhere and behind everything. He said, to understand that everything is moving under Krishna's control, to understand that everything and everyone is moving under Krishna's control. This understanding, this consciousness, is Krishna consciousness. Krishna, in other words, is behind everything. Krishna is behind the fact that you came to Vrindavan. Krishna is behind the fact that Bhadri Vishal built the most beautiful temple in Haridwar. Krishna is behind the fact that you forget sometimes. Krishna's behind the fact that you remember. Everything is under the full control of Krishna. This understanding, this is Krishna consciousness. Now, unfortunately, we lose this understanding that Krishna is behind, or is the control behind everything, and we think we are controlling everything, or if we are not yet doing, then we think we have to control everything so that our life is successful. And this is exactly the beginning of our material consciousness, the middle of our material consciousness, and the end of our material consciousness. It's, in other words, the basis of material life. To think either I am in control, or to think I have to control everything. I'm not yet controlling everything, but I must make some plans how to control everything. This is it. The Bhagavatam in the fourth canto, by means of a wonderful analogy, explains to us how our intelligence gets covered. The analogy is that Puranjana, that is Pura and Anjana. Pura means town, and Anjana here means the living entity. We have one Anjana amongst us from London. Maybe Anjana has another meaning as well. Must be. Hanuman, his name is also Anjana or Anjaneya. Yes. So here, Puranjana means the living entity. And when the living entity comes to the material world, it's described, he looks for a body, a suitable body. But just before he enters into his body, which is compared to be a town with 9 gates. He meets material intelligence in the form of the most alluring woman. I heard her bodily complexion was cloud-colored, and she was covered, she was dressed in a yellow dhoti, a yellow zari. Who knows whose colors are blue and yellow? Krishna, you know everything, Bhakti Vishal. But this material intelligence has the same colors to point out that the living entity trusts in his material intelligence, just like it would trust into God, in Krishna. So Puranjana enters the material world. He looks for a body, but he meets the material intelligence, who looks very beautiful. She is described as having rays that is very firm, breasts. She looks extremely attractive to Puranjana, and Puranjana goes near to him, just like a man who is romantically aroused, approaches a beautiful lady, and just at the moment when he's very close, Avigyam comes up. Avigyam is the super soul, the unknown. This is the same Sanskrit word as used here. The unknown super soul, and says, be careful, this will not be a good combination. But Puranjana is already so attracted to this beautiful being, the material intelligence, that he ignores the super soul and following her, this beautiful wife, who becomes his ruler, the queen of his life. It's described how the living entity Puranjana then goes into the material body and totally accepts the rulership of material intelligence and follows the material intelligence. It's described when the queen would laugh, Puranjana would laugh. When the queen was sad, Puranjana was also sad. When the queen would eat, Puranjana ate, and when the queen fasted, he would not eat anything. So it's very nicely described how for his whole life Puranjana is guided by this material intelligence, which covers Krishna, which pretends to be in charge, which pretends to be the ruler, but which blocks out the rulership of God. And then finally, he comes towards the end of his life. And just before he actually dies, again the unknown friend, the super soul, comes. Puranjana, who are you? I am your unknown friend. For so long you have ignored me. Puranjana says, I do not want to see you. Chalo. And then the Lord again leaves. He is reborn, as you all know, this time as a woman, and lives with a very good husband together. And follows the husband at the end of their rulership into the forest, where the husband performs devotional life and devotional austerity. Finally, the husband dies, and Puranjana, this time born as Vidarbhi, laments the death of the husband. She was one day massaging his feet and found out the feet were cold, which means he had just left the body. When someone leaves the body, one of the first signs is that he gets cold feet. So she prepares a funeral pyre, and as the body of her husband disintegrates into ashes, again and all of a sudden, it so happens that this the super soul comes. This time he comes disguised as a brahmana. In the midst of the forest, the funeral fire is burning, and Vaidabi looks at this unknown person and says, "Who are you?" And the brahmana very mysteriously answers, "Prabhuji, you look very beautiful when you sleep, but at the same time, it's not the best position for a Gita class. It's difficult to follow." So at this time, again, she asks this time, "Who are you?" The brahmana says, "I am your unknown friend. Don't you remember how once both of us lived together on the lake of the heart, and then you left me? Now you're looking for me, your friend. We were like two swans on the lake of your heart. Don't you remember?" My darling. And then she remembers, and her illusion is over. My dear devotees, those who are now from India, don't listen to what I say. Those who are from the West, listen. This is a way to say that the Indians, please listen very attentively, because when you are forbidden to listen to something, you will listen like anything. In Western psychology, this is very, very interesting. Here we find that we have an avigyayam, who is Suridam Sarvabhutanam, the friend of all living entities, but he is unknown to you. Constantly in need for friendship. This is a description for the living entity in this material world. We have given up our real friend Krishna. Now we look for another surrogate or substitute friend. We look for a fulfilling friendship in a relationship. We look in a fulfilling relationship in a partnership. We have forgotten that Krishna. We are looking for Krishna, and because we have forgotten him, we think we can find him somewhere else. I was once very, very amazed when one of my little elderly Mataji disciples wrote a love letter to one Gurukul grown-up man named, I will now change the name, let us call him Govinda Hridayam, Govinda within the heart. So Govindam, he wrote a letter to Govinda Hridayam. She wrote a letter which later was given to me, because it was such an impossible love letter to a man who wanted to stay celibate that the authorities, his authorities thought I should now preach to the to this woman and say and tell her. And so what I also read the letter, and something struck me. So I invited the lady, and I had her letter. This was like the letter, but I covered it with the Bhagavad Gita. And I wrote to her the letter, "Dear Govinda," and I read the whole letter to her, and at the end, I said, "Isn't that a wonderful letter to Krishna?" And she had been so much in romantic feelings that she had forgotten that she wrote the letter. She was just so up and so excited when she wrote the letter. And she agreed with me. It's a wonderful letter to Krishna. It was really a love letter. I wherever I go, I can only see your face. I'm going on Loi Bazaar and I see your face. I'm going to the temple and I see your face. It was really like that. Very, very romantically written. But not addressed to Krishna, but to this poor brahmachari who wanted to stay in brahmachari ashram. And I said, yes, this is a wonderful love letter to Krishna. But you have written it to a man who smells from 9 whores. Give me this letter. And she saw her handwriting. Krishna, Krishna, I'm very sorry. But this was the shock therapy, Sachinandan Swami. Thank you very much. I will not write these letters any longer. I will say, I'm sorry, I was something came over me, some material illusion. I'm very sorry. My dear devotees, don't laugh about this story. It's your own story. We very, very often think something or someone non-Krishna will satisfy it. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, this is the main problem of material intelligence, to be attached to something which has not a connection with Krishna. Most important problem of material life. So, in this very, very nice verse today, we learn that this supreme friend exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. But he is very subtle and therefore beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although he is far, far away, he is always near to all. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, is describing how one could still, you know, make contact to this unknown friend, the Lord within the heart. And it's through the process of Krishna consciousness or devotional service. By this devotional service, you can make Krishna, or you can attract Krishna. The Svetashvatara Upanishad singles out or identifies one process, the process of chanting the mantra, as a way to make the invisible visible, to make the unknown known, to make the unseeable seen, to make the unhearable heard. And says it's by chanting the mantra. And it gives the example from ancient Vedic times of Arani wood. Arani wood is a wood which, when you rub it with another wood like this, produces a spark. You have Arani wood, and then you have another wood, and then you put some dry grass here around, and then the spark. Have you seen Vadivishal? You do. Oh yeah, you did it. Arani wood. You can make fire. Vadivishal is also a sadhu who can live in the forest. He has learned this on his own. That means you need to know how to use Arani wood, especially for your sacrifices. If you do a fire sacrifice, with many forest dwelling sadhus use. So the Shvetashvatara Upanishad uses this ancient method of getting fire for the sacrifice and also for other purposes, as an example to tell us how we can make Krishna how Krishna, who's unmanifest, can become manifest. They say, make the body the lower wood, and the mantra the upper wood, and then chant, and then just like spark which comes from the wood, Lord Krishna will appear. This is the Shvetashvatara Upanishad example or analogy. And we have, during the Japa retreat, we have talked a lot on how to properly use this device. I can imagine if I would give this Arani wood to Bada Setu and asked him to make fire, because you have not learned it, maybe you wouldn't be able to produce fire from it. You have to learn it. You have to use it properly. I can well imagine I can't even use a fire lighter properly, so what to speak of Arani wood. You have to know the art. So in the same way, if you want that Lord Krishna appears within your heart, you need to learn the art of properly chanting the holy name. It's mainly you have to learn how to give full attention to your chanting, and that's not so easy if your mind is materially attached, like 80% of you today here in this room. And it's not easy to hear the Hare Krishna mantra, because your mind will go to those things which are where you are materially attached. So you have to learn the art of bringing the mind away from your material life and attachment, and attach it firmly to the chanting of the holy name. And it's an art. You have to learn it. I would say it's not known to 90% of the Hare Krishna movement, this art. You have to be willing to learn it. You have to go into this school. It's really a very high school of spiritual practice. But if you can learn it, or if you are interested to learn it, then Krishna will become manifested in your heart, and you will actually, while you chant, see the beautiful form of Krishna and feel his compassion and his kindness upon you, and later see the pastimes of Lord Krishna in your own heart. It's so wonderful. Please become interested in learning this art. I can't speak about this now because it's a very long, long, long subject matter. Speaking, if I would have to teach it to you, or would teach it to you, I'm also not a very good chanter, but if a good chanter would have to teach us, then he would take some time, you know, to teach this. It's a very, very high spiritual discipline. This is one thing I would like now. The idea is we want to perceive Krishna's presence everywhere. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives us a meditation. Do you sometimes meditate in your life? Is this something of interest to you, or do you never meditate? I think sometimes we have some meditators here, some devotees who like to absorb their mind in Krishna. There is a verse how you can meditate about Krishna in the heart. It's really very, very nice. Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Ano Aniyang Samanusmaretya Savasyadataram Achintya Rupam Adityavanam Tamasa Parastat. It's in the 8th chapter, text 9. Here Krishna says how you can meditate about him. My dear devotees, I think it's important to do this, to chant and to meditate about Krishna while chanting. See, otherwise these descriptions of verses of the Shastras will always remain a mystery to you, a mystery where you will soon become bored. Oh, I've heard this a million times and I've never seen any of it. You have to learn to practice it. I would like to, before I read this secret verse to you, it's a wonderful verse, I would like to tell you a little analogy which I hope makes it clear why practice is so important. There was once a monk, a brahmachari, like Badri Vishal, who came into a village in the Himalayan mountains. And this village had somehow turned atheistic, and the farmers began to challenge him as he entered the village. You with your God, where is God, please? Show me your God. So the brahmachari said, I'm a little tired from traveling. Could you please just give me a glass of milk first to get my life force working? So they had some some Himalaya cows, and they gave him milk, garam dut. And then the monk said to the farmers, I don't believe that in milk there's butter. No, there's butter. In our cow's milk is butter. No, I don't believe it. Show me the butter. Oh, showing butter, very difficult. Well, if you come to our house, when you are in our house, we can maybe show you butter. But here, it's very difficult to show you the butter within the milk. So the brahmachari was not satisfied. He said, whatever I can't see, that simply does not exist. And farmer said, but this is there? You have to just take a piece of wood and then go grrr, and then the butter within the milk will be at the wood, and then you scrape it off and you use it. Ah, said the brahmachari. If you need a process to bring out the unseen butter from the milk, don't you need a process to bring the Lord out and make him visible? Oh, said the farmers. Here you have a point. And they understood what he wanted to say. The Lord is like here. Like butter is all pervading the milk. It's going through everything of the milk and it's connected with it. The Lord is everywhere and you need to bring him out by a certain process. So here the meditation process is given. It says, one should meditate upon the Supreme Lord as the one who knows everything. He even knows how much money you have on the bank account, Padre Vishal. Jamashtami, he knows how much Lakshmi there is in the Mayapur Institute for Higher Education. Gaurahari, he knows what you thought yesterday when you were in the temple. So one should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything. As he who is the oldest, who is the controller of everything except your life. No, I read very wrong. Who is the controller? One should meditate upon him who is smaller than the smallest, who is the maintainer of everything, and who is beyond all material conception. You can't think, Krishna, with this foolish mind. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as one who is inconceivable and who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun and he is transcendental beyond this material nature. Would you like to hear the amazing purport of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to this meditation? Yeah? It's very, very interesting. You will like it very, very much. Please listen attentively. The Lord is omniscient, Kavi. Kavim Puranam. But though one may be omniscient, like Sanaka, this is a great saint, and others, one is not necessarily eternal. Therefore, the Lord is described as Purana, without a beginning. So, although the Lord is both omniscient and without beginning, this does not indicate that he becomes the instructor of bhakti as Paramatma. Therefore, he is called Anushasitaram, the teacher, who by mercy is giving instructions about devotion to himself when he appears as Krishna or Rama. So he teaches bhakti. He's not just only the Paramatma, he's also Krishna and Rama. Though he is merciful, he's still a difficult object to know factually. Compared to the smallest, he's even smaller. Then one could ask, is he like the jiva, the size of an atom? No, he is also of the greatest size. He's the smallest size and the greatest size, spreading everywhere, since everything is contained within him. Savasya dataram. Thus he is said to be inconceivable in form, achindya rupam. Though he, you know, like when he appeared as Lord Krishna and showed his mother the universes, also the universe in which he had appeared, he just opened his mouth and showed him that. So though, showed her that, though he appears of medium size as a human being, his manifestations is independent of all others. Thus he has a form, Vana, which is like that of the sun, Aditya, revealing both himself and others. Thus, though he is the possessor of Maya Shakti, Prakriti, his form is transcendent to Prakriti or Maya. This is how one meditates about the Lord. Very inconceivable meditation, but very, very nice. Krishna knows everything. He controls everything. And my dear devotees, the moment you become aware that Krishna is the supreme controller, you lose your anxiety. You lose fear. You lose your insecurities. You become very, very glad and happy. Even it is said, antikale chamang eva, at the time of death, which is the most difficult time. Some scriptures say the pain at the time of death is as if 1,000 scorpions bite you all at the same time. Ooh, extremely painful. It doesn't have to be like that, but that's just one way of describing. It is. But if you remember Krishna at that time as being in control, then you lose all fear and anxiety and become peaceful. It has been seen that people who at the time of death give their lives... yes. This is a practical demonstration. Now they will bring a raging bull into this room. The bull on which Yamaraj rides, and he will get on your case. I have ordered this bull to come. Then you have to remember Krishna. Maybe you can give me one torchlight here. I will return it. Hare Krishna, I think it will help you to have one fixed point. I don't want to put the light on myself. That is so arrogant. Let us continue. So the moment you understand that Krishna is in control, you immediately lose your fear. It is as if light comes into a darkened room where you are very afraid what will happen. And Hare Krishna. Yes, it is if you bring light into a room which is dark, and then you can see again, and you become happy without fear. So this is what this understanding of Krishna being in control does to you. It is very, very, very nice and very, very necessary. And therefore I really request you to go in your own reading time to the Bhagavad Gita and read this 8th chapter, text number 9. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes meditate about Krishna, knowing everything. Being smaller than the smallest, but at the same time expanding himself so that everything is maintained in him. You can meditate about him, that you cannot understand him, but that he is always a transcendental person. And you will find very much how your heart becomes happy, like a dying man who remembers the Lord will become happy and free from anxiety. You will also become happy and very much free from anxiety. It works. Here Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the super soul is also Krishna. God appears as super soul, but also as Krishna, being very merciful. In another one of his works, the Raghavatma Chandika, a very nice question is raised, and that is, does Krishna hear the prayers of the devotees who call out to him as their only shelter in this material world? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, you might ask, but why shouldn't he hear our prayers? Well, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in Krishna's Leela, Lord Krishna actually forgets that he is God, because he becomes afraid of Mother Yashoda, who comes after him with a stick. I mean, God is not afraid. Even an ordinary boxer, Max Schmeling, is not afraid of someone coming with a small stick to him. Does Krishna then hear when you call for him, oh my Lord, please protect me? And he, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, yes, although Krishna forgets that he is God, he still knows all the prayers of the devotees which are addressed to him, and he personally is taking care of his devotees, even those in this world. This is how he analyzed. He is simultaneously muktata, that is, bewildered by his lila shakti, but then savagya, all-knowing, and remembers everything. At the same time, the devotee who knows that Krishna is controlling and protecting him does still, when he is in this world, his part. And I would like to end with this, which I find is very, very important, because it brings one's own endeavor and the dependence on Krishna's mercy together in a very, very nice way. Some of you have heard that the Japa retreat this year was in Varshana. Now, about 20 years or maybe 30 years ago, there were still tigers in Varshana. They lived there. And there's one sadhu who lived there, Ramesh Baba, very nice devotee who very much likes the devotees of our movement, who appreciates very much the preaching which Srila Prabhupada has done. And so Ramesh Baba lived there with Radhanath Maharaj, and the time Radhanath Maharaj lived with him was when there were news of this terrible tiger who apparently had attacked some cows and killed them, and also there were some incidences with humans. And you know, when the tiger eats only one time human blood, he will always want to eat it again. It's like he has gotten the taste for it. So there, the one night they heard the roaring of the tiger, very nearby. And Radhanath Maharaj must have woken up and taken his torch. And there was Ramesh Baba sleeping very peacefully with a little stick next to him. A little small stick. Radhanath Maharaj said, tiger, it's coming. Ramesh Baba said, was just changing the sides and continued to sleep. I have my stick. How will this stick help you? Small stick, insignificant stick, useless stick, against one tiger? Ramesh Baba answered, I just want to show Krishna that I'm doing my part. Now he has to do his part. Isn't this how life is? We have to do our little part, whatever little we can do. Let us zwar give our full endeavor into what we can do. It will be little small, not much. And when Krishna sees that, he will certainly come to our help and help us. But we must also do our little part. We can't just say, okay, I've read in the Bhagavad Gita that he is the supreme controller. I don't do anything any longer. Krishna should do everything. No, he expects that his devotees make a little endeavor, and then Krishna will certainly, by his mercy, which he has shown when he appeared as Lord Krishna and Lord Rama, he will come to our help and help us. Hare Krishna. I hope that you have taken some inspirations from this Bhagavad Gita class. I would like to give you a little summary of the subjects which we discussed. We talked about Krishna being, or the Super Soul, being all-pervading, being present everywhere. And we explained a little bit how Prabhupada has talked about how by a process he becomes visible. We gave the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra as the main process, and compared it with the rubbing the wood properly. But we also said you have to learn it. I often feel that sometimes we don't do things properly, and then the experience is not with us 100%, and we lament and turn to the material side. We were also talking how to meditate upon the Supreme Person, and we were encouraging you at the end to become good devotees who believe in Krishna's control and Krishna's mercy, but who are ready to do their little part. Remember the little sticker. I think that's an analogy on our life, Jamashtami. This, we should have do our little endeavor. Krishna will do the main thing. Dobro. Dobro. So let us now see if there are any questions regarding the subject, or if you have any other questions. I will also try my best to answer the questions. Hare Krishna. Our Mataji is there. Mataji is there. Who else is there? Our good name? Swarup Damodar Prabhu, the freshly married Dharmagup. Hare Krishna. Human is also there. And our, what is good name? Your good name? Brajananda Das Anudas. Good. Father of Mahojwala, isn't it? Wonderful. Wonderful. And Doyal Nitai. Good. So, who was the first one, please? Our Mataji, Rangadevi, please say your questions. Say it loud, please, so that we all can understand. Yeah. Thank you, Rangadevi, for asking this question. Rangadevi says, well, could we misuse this? You know, I do a little and then Krishna does everything. No, with this example, I just wanted to show that we do have to give a serious endeavor, but whatever is our serious endeavor, it will always remain small. We are small people, Rangadevi. No, we small people will do our best. it will always be small in comparison to Krishna's huge mercy. We shouldn't be lazy. That's very important. Thank you very much for... Yes, anyone else? Yes, Raj... No, there were many before. Please, I'm becoming an old man. I forgot who else was there. Swarup Damodar, please speak.
So, when the devotee chants the holy name, and then he will see the form of the Lord. And it's just, or it's, in order to, it will happen, should it be some special meditation on this subject? Or it will happen automatically because of
Swarup Damodar Prabhu was asking about about seeing the form of the Lord while chanting. Will it happen automatically as the devotee progresses, or is some meditation required? What is required is that you learn to chant properly. The first class in chanting is to avoid the 10 offenses. The second is that you hear about Krishna's form from the scriptures. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the form and the chanting and the name will come together. The way you can also do this is you can sit before the deity, and as you chant and look at the deity of Krishna, then you will more and more begin to understand how the name which you have in your mouth and in your heart is the person who is on the altar. I have a tape I don't think it ever made it in the tape ministry. It was a tape where Srila Prabhupada talked to devotees who were very skeptical, doubtful, who had not a good, who were in a troubled consciousness. And he sent these devotees before the deity of Krishna and the temple and said they should sit there and just chant and look at the deities. That would remove all the trouble in their consciousness. Mm-hmm. It will happen by revelation. If you want to make it happen artificially, you will you don't give Krishna any space for revealing himself. You are controlling your spiritual advancement by some visualization techniques, for instance, and that's not so good. It will happen. I mean, there are many devotees in our movement. I mean, our movement has very, very advanced devotees who chant and they close their eyes and they feel Krishna's presence. And so on. It is something which several devotees in our movement have realized, but they don't want to talk. I mean, they don't talk about this because it sounds so much like, you know, marketing, you know, who would go on the marketplace and describe the most treasured things, you know, and make it a public entertainment. Hare Krishna. Yes, Dhammagup.
It's almost every moment there's a some voice coming from within, speaking that you should now chant, listen to what you chant, don't do this, be Krishna conscious, I don't know, get up to the step too much or anything. So is that voice something connected to super soul or is intelligence?
Yeah. Dhammagup says at every moment, or almost every moment, we hear some voice of the soul, don't do this, do this, be careful here, you slept too much, don't eat more, then your filling is reached, you know, belly is fully stocked. I think we all have this experience, isn't it? That we hear. So, is this the super soul or the mind and intelligence? It's a not so easy question. You have to learn to discriminate the voice of the super soul from others. It's almost like when you are in the old times, I don't know if it's now still there, we had radios and you had to go and put the radio on the right channel, and then you would hear a certain radio emission or radio program. But if you were already one little bit next to it, you would hear another radio program. So to find really the super soul channel, you need to know how the voice of the super soul sounds, you know, what is his. And the voice of the super soul, we hear from Shastra, is very much identical in content with the voice of the Shastra, the voice of the sadhus, the devotees, and the voice of your spiritual master. When you hear something which reminds you of this voice, then you are on the right channel, the super soul channel. But if it's something you have never heard in Shastra, or which is very difficult to combine with Shastra, or with Guru, and so on, you know most probably it's the mind or intelligence channel which is now speaking. I would recommend you, Dhammagup, to first of all start to not ignore these voices. The problem is why we don't know the super soul channel and how it's different from others. We have been very expert to ignore the voice of the Super Soul since many lifetimes. This is brought about in this Puranjana analogy, you know, how he just didn't want to listen to the Super Soul. And because we have been so expert to ignore Krishna in the Super Soul, we really don't know how he sounds any longer, you know, it's, we are too bewildered. My suggestion is that you take serious what the Super Soul tells you. I had an experience in Braj like this. I was walking somewhere, and then all of a sudden I heard the voice, "Jump out of the way, 2 meters." So I jumped. And at that moment, a bull who was in full, you know, he had seen another bull and he wanted to fight with him. It just went like, shoo, and just from the back he came. It just missed me. I could almost show you in my shirt where he almost, you know. It's a really, he really missed me. If I would not have listened to this, I would not be giving the Bhagavad Gita class, but would lie in Ram Krishna Hospital, and some of you might make my last kirtan, you know. Hare Krishna Sachinandan Swami, chalo, go now, it's your time. You know, so in my mind I have said, I will from now on just listen to the Super Soul. We have ignored it so often. We say, oh yes, we have a little funny feeling, but I keep on walking. A horn goes through your stomach, you know. Many of us have not listened to the Super Soul, and that's why they made great mistakes in their lives. Hare Krishna. Including myself. Anyone? There was another person, Nita Dayal, and then actually, or should we ask the father of Mahajwala? Yes. Braja Prema Anant, what is your question?
Thank you for class. I want to ask for remembrance of Krishna, for the visualization of Krishna in the moment of death, how much we need mercy, otherwise of our endeavor.
Yeah. Yeah. How much do we need mercy at the time of death from Krishna? And how much is dependent on our own endeavor? The devotee will always think it's all up to Krishna's mercy. There's a wonderful prayer by Draupadi, who, as we all know, was in a very dangerous situation where she was entirely dependent on Krishna. And it really describes a little bit Krishna's appearance out of his mercy. It says, like a boat for a drowning man, you have now appeared. Like many pots full of amrita, which save someone who is dying of thirst, you have appeared before me. Like a qualified doctor who is coming to the patient who is about to die, you have now appeared out of your mercy for me. So the devotee will pray very much like this, that Krishna at the time of death comes totally out of his mercy. And there are many very encouraging signs how Krishna has come out of mercy to devotees at the time of death. Sankalpa, there are many encouraging signs. How the Lord at the time of death has appeared to devotees. It gives so much wonderful. Here in Vrindavan, so many devotees have been graced by Lord Krishna at the time of their death. It's really encouraging. It gives so much hopes to us, and I really believe a book should be written about this. Because these devotees were devotees like, you know, they were of the same age as we in spiritual life. They had maybe their struggles in their spiritual lives. But Krishna has appeared to them at the time of death. As far as the mercy to die in Vrindavan, I think it's a great, we can pray for that mercy. There is a prayer to Gopeshwara Mahadev that please let me die in Vrindavan. You know, anyone who dies here is not under the control of Yameshwara. Is it Yameshwara? Yamaraj, I'm sorry. But he is under the control of Yameshwara. Yameshwara is Lord Shiva, the greatest of Krishna's devotees. Anyone who dies here, Yamaraj is not coming to him. He's under the control of Lord Shiva. Those who live at Radhakund say that this applies only to the Radhakund area. But it is not so. It is their Shastric references that all over Vrindavan, whoever dies is under the control of Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. Oh, he's a devotee and he wants that we go back home, back to Godhead. He is the greatest mystic. He can make the impossible possible. And the devotees who have died here have seen very, very nice things. You might remember at the Govardhan retreat, we had a devotee who had tried everything to be healed from cancer, but the cancer was incurable. It was the mother of Ananta Tirtha. And she came and just her last days, she just lay down on a mattress next to Giriraj and listened to all the Govardhan retreat. And then she went to Vrindavan, was brought to Vrindavan. And hardly 2 weeks later, she left the body. Hardly. Krishna's mercy. Okay, so I think we have Dayal Nitai, this is the last question. Misho will translate the question for you. Yes, Misho.
The question is connected to the lecture you gave at Govardhan Maharaj, where you were telling the story about demon Keshi. And then during the lecture you said that Krishna showed his tongue to demon Keshi, but he did not understand the meaning of this. So can you tell us, please?
Krishna, when Keshi demon attacked, Krishna just showed him playfully his right thumb, or no, the left thumb, the thumb of the left hand or left arm. This meant, I will be victorious with the thumb of my left arm, and then he just thrust his left arm into the mouth of Keshi. Terrible mouth, big teeth, yellow teeth. And then he began to inflate his arm, which became so big that it suffocated Keshi to death. So it meant a sign, I will be victorious. Krishna, also to the Kaliya demon, he just said when the Kaliya demon kept him so long in his coils, 2 hours, which was really very, very excruciating, painful for the Brajavasis, Krishna said to the Kaliya demon, up till now you have shown me your strength. Now, And he smiled very sweetly, "I will show you my strength." And then he expanded himself and broke free from the deadly imprisonment of Kaliya. So, Hare Krishna, I want to thank you very, very much for listening so patiently. I wish you all the best. Please, if you ever think of a poor beggar called Sachinandan Swami, think of him favorably. Pray to the deities. We go in a few days back to the West. Ooh, few days means day after tomorrow. And I'm very sad. I mean, it's also, once I'm back in the West, I will be happy to preach, but now I'm Krishna, how, you know, the beautiful Yamuna, beautiful devotees, the atmosphere of Vrindavan, it's home. In the West, our body is more at home, you know, there, it doesn't have this gravitational problem. It's a new word for bad digestion. A polite word. It doesn't have, in the West we don't have so many mosquitoes, and we know where all our things are in our thing. And there is one preparation in the West which we cannot have in India. Cream, you know. And so our mind thinks, oh, and it's sure whenever you go to the light switch, you know, when you open it, there will be electricity, you know, at least 99.9%, whereas here this is not always very sure, you know. So for the body and the mind, the West might offer some security and some happiness. But really for the soul, West is a dangerous place. Hare Krishna. For the soul, the West is dangerous. Must be careful. So thank you very much. Here's your torchlight, whoever gave this. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Goni Tai ki, Sisi Radha Syam Sunda ki, Gaura Prema Nandi Hari Hari Bol.